Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. After solving a few technical glitches, I'm pleased to be joined by Brian, who is here to give us a sustainability update. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks for having me again. Sorry about the delay.
So, you know, so much has been going on in the last few months in the sustainability world, and so much has been happening in the world of the monastery that we haven't had a report. So I thought maybe you could just kind of run us through some of the highlights.
Well, right now, we've been working on a lot of water projects, trying to figure out ways to best manage, especially during what's probably going to be a very dry summer, the use of water on the property. It just so happens that, of course, when there are lots of folks here who need to use water, there's also all of the plant life around here is making its biggest demands for water. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at ways that we can reduce our need to draw from the well. And sort of life presented one of those glorious opportunities in thinking about how we make use of water that we use for washing dishes, that we use for washing our bodies, because all of, we don't consume that water, we just use it for something, and then it just goes off into the rest of the water cycle. And so we're looking at how can we use that water more than once. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, then we're looking at, okay, well, it's gray water, and we need to be really careful in how we use it and make sure it's only used for specific sorts of agricultural purposes. And how do we store it, and how do we filter it, and all of that. And then it's, okay, so we could definitely use this in the garden, but the places that we are producing it are downhill from the garden. Why don't we move part of the garden down below them?
And
so that's what we're working on right now, is putting in fruit trees below the outshowers so that when folks are using the outshowers a lot over the course of a retreat, say, all of that water then is being reused by the roots of a little food forest. Mm-hmm. And then that provides us with a nice experience. You walk out of the shower and there's cherry and pear blossoms hanging out, doing their thing, living their life cycle. And then on top of that, gives us back a resource. And it cleans up that water before it goes into the next stage of the water cycle. Uh-huh. So that,
like running through the root system, you're saying, that actually cleans up the water.
Well, not so much the plant root system to a certain extent, but mainly the entire ecology of organisms that live around the plant root system. So we're digging a very large trench for the plants to grow their roots down into, and that's going to be topped with a berm, and then above that will be a swale. It'll be very, very heavily mulched. Mm. And in that will be fungus that will scrub out any organic molecules that are in the water, soaps and whatnot, kill off any bacteria and whatnot, and generally purify the water in the same way that it happens in nature. If you go, if you're in a forest and you find a nice, you know, pure water spring, it's a good chance that there's thousands of feet, square feet of dirt, of soil above that has fungus in it, hundreds of thousands perhaps of cubic feet of fungus that's filtering all that water.
It's basically nature's Brita water filter system.
Absolutely. So we're just trying to work with what nature's already doing in a way that's going to provide a benefit to the monastery.
And, you know, this is one of those obvious things, but I never really stopped to think about it, and I had an education on it as I was ordering a product, and I was talking to a great company who, you know, does all this kind of work, and really got it how terrible septic systems are, and how basically, so normally, the way it works in an average household is that we take a shower, and even though that water from the shower, it's nothing like, say, toilet water that really does need to be treated in some way. You know, it's toxic in some way. But the shower water isn't. You know, the water from the kitchen isn't. But it all, because of the way a household works, it all just goes in the same place. And so gallons and gallons and gallons and gallons and gallons of water are basically contaminated and then sent to be treated. And so we've sort of created this monster for ourselves, this huge, you know, need for water treatment. And so I appreciate so much how what we're doing at the monastery is really looking at, A, how can we separate those things out so that, like, our shower water can just get reused as a gray water system. Goes, you know, we're not going to drink it, but the trees can drink it, no problem. And then have the you know, have that separated from, say, toilet water so it doesn't get contaminated in that way but can be reused?
Yeah, you know, a septic system is, water system is kind of dualistic thinking writ large. You know, it's water is either pure and drinkable or it's awful and nothing can be done with it until it goes into some large facility and lots of chemicals are dumped in it and whatnot. And so, you know, what we're looking at is all of the shades of gray, literally, you know. So gray water, you certainly wouldn't drink it. It wouldn't be safe to drink. But it can be used for agricultural purposes as long as you're not growing a crop that's going to be in contact with water at any point. You know, and it's totally safe in that application. And so recognizing the challenges that life presents at each stage and then seeing how those can be opportunities is kind of the way to get around that dualism of just water is either ready to drink or you can't touch it.
Yeah. One of the things I appreciate so much about practice, and in particular the guide, you know, it just happened the other day in a meeting. We'll be talking about something, and there's sort of this, okay, well, we've got to do X, and so our choices are A or B. And so often what comes from the guide or from practice is, well, but what about this? And it's something completely outside of, as you're saying, that dualistic thinking. And I feel like that's a big piece of what's going on in the sustainability work here. It's just looking at, okay, what have we got? We've got stuff that needs water. And it all, as you say, it all needs water at the same time, in the same season. And we have a heck of a lot of water. Can we pair those two things together without just dumping this water and treating that water and so on?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that a lot of sustainability is about that, is that, you know, there was a time when we needed technological solutions to address a lot of the world's problems, and we found some technological solutions, and in a lot of cases didn't understand the consequences of those things, you know. So if we can't grow enough food, well, okay, let's throw chemicals at the ground so that more food will grow there. Oh, we destroyed all the soil. Okay, well, let's just go and cut down more forests and grow food there. Oh, look, now, you know, that's a huge carbon sink and all that's been dumped in the atmosphere, and it turns out that's not a very good thing to have happen. And so a lot of what happens, I think, in sustainability is going back to those places where it's got to be A or B, and recognizing that there is a middle way, that it's not that we have to either experience privation or accept the first technical solution that comes along, regardless of what its consequences are. We can say this solution has worked for us in the past to get us to the moment we are, but there are other options available to us in this moment, and really looking to that moment to see what's available.
Yeah. Oh, that's so perfect, really. And you, a while back, a few weeks ago, you talked about some things that are really evidence that it's working, like the swales up on the food forest hill on the higher area, that's really working, that things are really thriving up there.
Yeah, they're very excited. I think there's a lot of cool organisms going on. You know, I project a lot onto fungi and plants because I spend a lot of time around them, and I don't know, I have to talk to somebody. And, you know, I found my first mushrooms in the swales, and very deeply grateful for their contribution there. But then also there's cover crop up there. So now as part of the process, we were trying to build up that hillside with more and more different types of biomass. And so if you look at above the swale, it's a little bit green still because we did get some nice rain, but it's also a little bit brown, and it's all annual grasses. And now if you look below the swale on the hillside, there are beans and vetch and snow peas and 100 different types of clover, and especially then around all the trees where we've been doing deep watering with water actually from the kitchen primarily. So all of our caribs and our acacias and things like that are getting one at a time watered very deeply so that the water penetrates into the ground and doesn't evaporate off. And so those areas then are becoming these little green circles that are just filled with all kinds of different plant and ultimately animal life too, because the bees are very happy up there. Mm. I spent a fair amount of my time dodging bees and being very grateful for that experience because we need bees.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. It's not what we're going for, success, but boy, it's fun when it works, isn't it? That you can really see the evidence of it.
Yeah, and it's a great opportunity to practice being grateful for the successes that do arise in our life.
Yeah,
I've often, people describe me as an optimist, and I say, well, I'm actually kind of a pessimist if I have to be somewhere on that spectrum, but I do try to make sure that I'm always really grateful when things don't turn out as badly as I think they're going to. And that's really important because, you know, conditioned mind is telling us at all times that everything is going to turn out as bad as is possible,
yeah.
and that's never true.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we're constantly looking to what life offers, we're always getting the information that it's not nearly as bad as we were told it was going to be, and that's kind of a really pleasant place to live.
It really is, and I'm not sure anyone besides someone who's doing practice would have the perspective of, gosh, I was so grateful to dodge a lot of bees today. That's good.
Yeah, you know, I think that you have to bring a certain amount of attention to how they fit into the broader picture of things,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's really important. Something that practice brings is the ability to look into the present moment and see what's before me, but also then have a bigger picture of all of life is unfolding and it's all necessary.
Yes. We got to turn it over to Michael and Sherry, but I just wanted to just parens that. So one of the things we want to be doing is catching rainwater off our roof, so we don't have all the fancy gutters and stuff in place yet. But so what we did when we had a couple of really good rains, we put trash cans just on drip lines on the roof. I was shocked by how much water hundreds and hundreds of gallons of water just from putting trash barrels on those drip lines. It was incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And the great thing about that is that, you know, the opportunity there is, oh, we didn't get it done in time, and then just to see, well, we got actually a tremendous amount just by seeing the opportunity as it arose and making the effort. And, you know, I'm very excited about that because then that rainwater can support the garden through the summer. And for folks who haven't seen the garden, folks have been doing some tremendous work in the garden. I don't talk too much about the garden because I don't spend nearly as much time in there as I probably ought to. I'm all around different parts of the property. That's not really my remit, but it's tremendous what's happened in there, and it's really amazing. And I hope that, you know, people who come to the property this year get a chance to see the glory that is happening in there.
Yeah, there and everywhere. You know, take a shower in the out shower and feed those new trees and just everywhere. So huge gratitude, Brian, for all you're doing for the property and sustainability efforts in general.
Yes, well, you know, I'm just tremendously grateful to have the opportunity to work on really life-affirming sort of projects. You know, it's sort of stuff that makes the heart feel good. So, you know, gratitude for having that opportunity.
Yeah. Well put. Thanks so much. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Brian. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
Really, really good. You?
I'm really, really good myself.
Good. You know, they didn't have enough time to talk about everything, so hopefully they'll keep those conversations going. They didn't really talk about the one that's my current favorite, and that is where the kitchen water is being the filtering system that's being set up for the kitchen water. It's just so fun. So,
cool.
Yes, as Brian was saying, when people come up, be sure and take the tour of the garden because it's really astounding what's happening in there. So I'm good, and I'm doing an email class.
Yeah,
and I'm loving that, and it's spring. Life is good, isn't it?
Life is very good. Life is very good. Great.
And are you feeling okay?
I'm feeling better. I'm much improved in a way that didn't seem possible a week ago.
Isn't that good?
It is good. And, you know, as you always remind us, you know, to suspend judgment or stay in I don't know mind is really, really helpful, and to have the trust and faith that life has always been good to me and supportive of me and however that turns out.
Yeah, there's no reason to assume it's going to quit now, huh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And,
so.
And as we're all fond of pointing out regularly, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to come in a form that I'm enthusiastic about right now.
Right.
But sooner or later, if I'm paying attention, I'm going to realize Yep, that was for me too.
That was for me too. All of it is for me.
Yeah. You got announcements?
I do indeed. There are still spots available for Guidance Day on June 7th. Support your practice with individual guidance.
Great opportunity.
Yes. And also in June, from the 25th to the 29th, the Exploring Intimacy and Relationships Retreat is designed to help us discover the true source of unconditional love. You mean it's not somebody else?
Well, it might be. I think we better go to that retreat and find out.
And find out. Well, I'm going to be there, so I will find out myself.
All right.
Yes. And visit schedule.livingcompassion.org for more information on these and all our events.
Yes, now, and of course, I'm like a terrier with a bone that I am, which is for people on the East Coast to keep their eyes open. I think I'm not sure that there's nothing wrong with you retreats at the monastery aren't full already for this time. There may be a couple of slots in the later one, but it's coming up in August in North Carolina. And so let us know if that's something you want to do because... You know, it's a big deal for us to put something like that together. So we'd love to know if people are as enthusiastic or close to as enthusiastic about it as we are.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Our call-in number today is 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. The show ID is 15406. And then you'd enter your PIN followed by pound. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes. So let's get started.
Good.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Julianne.
Hey, Julianne, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
Good.
You're doing really well. Yeah.
Awesome. let's see. I guess I'm just checking in. I am just, there's so many things that I want to tell you. but I guess that the biggest thing that I kind of saw over the last, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks ago, was I was practicing letting go. With letting go of expectations, and it works. It's amazing, and it was just working like a charm. And so I asked myself, why is this working? You know, ego wanted to get in there and noodle it probably, but I decided to look into it, and I realized that. The reason why, so it was basically I realized that, you know, conditioning had sort of hijacked my practice in a way that I was practicing to feel good instead of to be awareness.
Uh-huh. Wow. That's a really important distinction, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so the trap that I've fallen into was I would have these amazing days followed by these horrible days followed by an amazing day, and it was just this complete roller coaster. And I'm still going to have these roller coasters, but I was kind of I saw that the reason was because I was practicing to feel good, and so that's why I started practicing. You know, I didn't really get it that there were so many stages to this, but basically I realized that the reason why dropping expectations works so great is that I had been being convinced practically 100% of the time that there was something wrong when there never is. It was exactly what you say. There is nothing wrong ever.
And so let me see if I'm following you here.
Okay.
This is important.
Yes.
So when we fall into expectations, first of all, kudos to you for taking that on, because the two most difficult things, as far as I can tell, in the world for us to get are assumptions and expectations,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we only know they're there after the fact,
mm-hmm.
right? So
mm-hmm.
so you're going to take on expectations, and so you begin to let me ask you, how did you do that? How did you approach letting go of expectations?
Great question. I decided to let go of needing to feel good and to let go of avoiding feeling bad.
Uh-huh. Because without that focus on everything has to feel good,
mm-hmm.
then we can just be open to what's there.
Exactly. It was like obliterating a dam of resistance, and what came flooding in was life force.
Uh-huh.
yeah.
That's one of those where you kind of have to glue your shoes to the ground because...
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Oh, no. Well, I was going to say, and so that was just unbelievable for like 2 weeks or whatever period of time. And then I fell into a new trap, mm-hmm. which was that, well, I started a 30-day retreat. I was like, I'm doing all these things that I haven't been doing, all these practice things suddenly now to like, but anyway, so I started this 30-day retreat. I want to stay in under the 5 minutes.
You're okay. Go ahead. This is good stuff. Good stuff.
Okay. So let's see. So basically I did everything, you know, this wasn't what your encouragement is, but I loaded up my 30-day retreat with all kinds of stuff that I was going to be accomplishing. This is really funny. Yeah. And so like on day two, I completely did every single thing that I wasn't supposed, in quotes, supposed to do, and so I recorded about that, and I was like, what happened here? I was, you know, doing so great with letting go of expectations, and suddenly I'm in the dark room, and
uh-huh.
You know, the point, and so I realized that, hang on, because
what expectations had definitely crept back in, hadn't they?
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
That
yeah.
That you're going to do these 150 practice things every day perfectly.
right. Oh, so what it was that I fell for was that ego got me with, I just want to let go. You know, that life is just so incredibly, horribly hard and miserable that you deserve to just let go, Julianne. This is just too much. Just let go and go, you know, stay up really late and watch some horrible... Well, I don't watch TV anymore, so I had learned how to watch TV on my computer instead. So, you know, watch some TV, go unconscious, basically, is what it was luring me into.
Uh-huh.
And
so
now,
the same language, right? Same language of letting go.
Yes.
But now instead of letting go of ego and enjoying all this life force, ego has now convinced you that letting go means letting go of consciousness.
Exactly. And that was awesome. It was so great to see that because it was really a poorly constructed, you know, if I didn't have the chance to record and listen about it, I'd be in a bad way. But I recorded and listened to it, and I saw how weak this construction was and how it was using the very thing that was giving me freedom to let go.
It is, you know, it's not smart, but it is a kind of a brand of clever.
It is.
In that it can mimic anything that goes on. So it here's letting go. It sees how that works
mm-hmm.
for you. Within a really short period of time, it had switched the no expectations into massive expectations
mm-hmm.
and standards to be met, and then
mm-hmm.
uses the term letting go, which you had obviously enjoyed,
mm-hmm.
Against you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was.
And the bottom line of this, for me anyway, taking it
mm-hmm.
back to not being concerned about how you feel, which
mm-hmm.
is so important and so
yes.
baffling to us for a very long time. But when we lose interest in that, now life can really offer us awareness.
Exactly. And it was the first time I really got that
mm-hmm.
ever at all. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I didn't understand that at all before.
Right.
And, so, you know, and I realized that letting go is the only way to have.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. It's
mm-hmm.
it's that paradoxical kind of stuff that just makes people crazy and want to quit practice. because by you let go of everything and you get everything. You have everything. You have no expectations. You don't care how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And you're living in conscious compassion and awareness, and you feel
mm-hmm.
great, even though anybody looking at your life would say, this is awful. You cannot
mm-hmm.
possibly be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And you are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. it's pretty amazing. And I'm so excited to be able to give, you know, I'm putting out into the universe I'd like the information to come in to be able to give back to the monastery. And I'm going to let that come to me as to how that's going to happen. And I'm so just grateful for everything that you've taught.
Mm.
And I just appreciate it so much. So, yeah.
Right.
Thank
so
you.
I've taken a practice that you can also take up if you would like. And
okay.
that is being a squeaky wheel. So what I say is, when I'm talking about these things with life, you know,
mm-hmm.
I want to be a squeaky wheel for unconditional love, for generosity and gratitude, for being present, for being willing, for being filled with compassion, for being an expression of the intelligence and wisdom that animates us, for the peace and the joy that's life. I want to be a squeaky wheel. And I want more and more and more of that. I want more and more and more of that. I want to live more and more and more in that place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you can be a squeaky wheel in the same way. So it's like, you know, you're over there tapping your foot. Life. Life. I need this information. I got a lot of gratitude and generosity going here. We need some direction. Squeaky wheel.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Okay. Well, I'll talk
good
to
night.
You soon. All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Thank you,
bye-bye.
Michael. Bye.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Julianne. Add me to the squeaky wheel team, Sharon.
Yeah, we'll be squeaky wheels.
Yes.
If there is more unconditional love and compassion to have, to share, I want it.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Good.
And we have another caller here.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Virginia.
Hi.
Well, hello, Virginia.
Hi. Hi.
How are you doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Well, I love that last conversation. Wow.
It's big, isn't it?
It's big. It's big and beautiful. I'm going to listen to that over again because that was just really inspiring. And I just wanted to call and check in, Sherry. I'm loving the email class. And I wanted to let you know that on one of the recent assignments, it was an assignment that there was a lot of energy around not being able to do it. And then, well, something happened. Actually, I've been kind of swimming in all of the practice supports we've been having lately with coaching and texting and mentoring, group coaching and stuff like that. And
I can't have too much of a good thing, do you think?
Absolutely not. It's been fabulous. And it has just been a delight. Each and every one distinctly different and the same, but so supportive. I'm just
rolling
in
mean.
It. Yeah. Yep. So what happened is the person who loves practice and who, I don't know, there was an assignment that I was being convinced I couldn't do, and then all of a sudden it was suggested to me that there is a person, there's always a person that is up for any task, and I've heard that before.
So,
actually.
Did this just drop in, or did your coach or somebody, it just came into your life that there's always someone who's willing to do whatever,
exactly.
Up to whatever the task is. Okay,
it came in a text, actually, and I've heard you say that before. And then, but then all of a sudden, I saw her, or she came, or, you know, or we found each other.
she appeared.
Yeah, exactly. And anyway, it was just the coolest experience because all of a sudden, it was the assignment was done and continues to be done because I've incorporated it as a practice with grace and ease and just ease. That's the only word I can think to describe it. Anyway, it was
okay. So to make this universal, so that we can all take advantage of it, because you're following along with the email class, there's a lot of resistance, huh? Resistance is alive and well in many, many people's lives. And that's what it does to us, right? So something happens. Something comes along. In this case, it's an assignment in an email class, but it could be anything. Right? I mean, the boss says, or the, you know, a friend says, whatever it is. And in that moment, just lightning fast, resistance comes in with either said or felt. You can't do that. You won't. And as soon as it has our attention, we're with it.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Right? Now all it has to do is build the case.
Right. Well, yes, exactly. And it can be very convincing because in this instance, it was something that I've never been able to accomplish before, or, you know, I've tried before, and it's and always, you know, a long list of unsuccesses. So,
Yeah. So it's got history on its side, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's, no. And because we're so trained, then we just go right along with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But,
yes.
But now let's stay with this. However, you have all these supports in place, and because you do practice, you're not going to just say, "Oh, okay," and quit, right?
Right.
So you remain open to it, even though the story it sounds like is still going on. That you've never been successful before. I mean, here's another one, and once it gets us in that place, it's like, do you really want to put yourself through another humiliation? I mean, haven't you proved to yourself already that you can't do this, right?
Right.
So it's got a lot of ammunition, but you do practice, and so you don't just drop it. And here comes life just drops in the perfect little message to bring the lights up.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah, you know, that's beautifully put, actually.
What happened, huh?
Yeah, it was so perfectly orchestrated. I could not have arranged it better, actually.
That's exactly right. And it kind of goes back to the previous conversation where, and what we were talking about with Michael at the beginning of the show, that when we are open to life, we are able to receive that kind of what feels like miraculous progression, where we're taken from a difficult place through a series of insights and awarenesses that bring us to a completely new place of seeing. Now, what happened to us before we started practicing is something would happen, all of that resistance, the habit, the karma, the conditioning would rise up, and we would just stop in our tracks right there, which is how a person is unsuccessful at something over and over and over again. Right?
Yes, yes.
But with this, you were practicing, and so you watched all of that come up. I can only guess, felt the feelings and thought the thoughts and had the memories, but you stayed. And so life was able to show you the next scene and the
yes.
next possibility and the next opening.
Yeah, and it's almost like at the beginning of that sequence that you're describing, there was enough moment, I don't know if you'd say momentum, but there was, because of all the supports and that
yes.
that are supporting me to practice, it's like the momentum was
increased,
was lifted up so much that it had to flow over, you know.
Yes, yeah, you're primed.
Yeah.
Right? You're primed, you're positioned for awareness. And again, on the opposite side, that's what happens to people. Conditioning is constantly just working away at somebody, just working them, working them, working them, working them, working them. And they are primed as well. They're primed for failure, for believing the voices, for being overwhelmed or confused or depressed or defeated or whatever it is. So it's, again, it's the same process. It's just, where are we putting our attention? You have put just about, it sounds like, as much attention as possible squarely on practice.
Yes.
So that's the direction you're going to go in. There's no, and that feeling after a while of, with the momentum, that you're being carried along.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
You're just being carried along. From awareness to insight to opening to possibility to action to insight to, it's not hard. It's not work any longer.
Right, exactly. The possibility of that, I get the possibility of that. And on previous guidance from you, Sherry, I know that the idea is to record it, to listen to
mm-hmm.
it, you know, and then,
mm-hmm.
of course, let it go and be ready for the next insight that drops in.
Yes, and I find myself saying over and over in the email class that, you know, I record it, I record that insight, whatever that insight is, and I listen to it, and in the pause after hearing it, more insight drops in.
Yes.
And I record that, and it is like that snowball effect
yeah.
that we've been pointing at. It just grows and it gets bigger and faster as it avalanches down the mountainside of awareness.
Down the mountainside of awareness. I love that. Yes. And I just also want to tell you that partly it's the process, but also, you know, as I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm just going to run it by you, that, you know, with the Enneatype that I get identified with, it often feels like I'm dragging around a bag of rocks, you know, or slogging through mud or something like this.
Uh-huh.
And so to be able to become acquainted with the part of me who...
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Is a part of me who does things with ease.
Yes, exactly. Such
so
a good point. Such a good point. Again, egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is an expert at positioning the wrong person in a job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's, right.
Yeah. So if you have an Enneatype that is not, what would we say? Get out in the front of the pack and lead the charge.
Right.
Then you want that aspect of the personality to be there when you want to relax.
Yeah.
When you want to enjoy just kind of being and open to just calm, present. Yeah. But that the fact that you have that part of you doesn't mean you don't have this other part that can get out there and lead the charge.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for saying that. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think of it that way, but yes. Great. Yeah. This is exciting. I mean, this is like a whole new relationship. It's like meeting myself and having, you know, I'm like dating myself or something. You know, finding out all these things.
And with the practice the way we do it, you know, that new part of you can be in relationship, can be mentored in the same way. You know, so you're going to do a 30-day retreat. You're going to work on something with your coach or whatever it is. Well, it could be that part of the personality that you would bring forward to be mentored, to be encouraged and supported.
In other words, if I did a 30-day retreat, you say that in a slightly different words, Sherry?
Yeah, just that. So you know, I don't have that same enneatype. You know that bag of rocks image,
yeah,
dragging around. I have the enneatype that is throwing them.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I might say, for instance, need to bring out the part of me that is more calm and enjoys peace and quiet and reflection and kind of more like that aspect of you that we were just talking about. So if I want to foster that way of being and support that aspect of my life, then I might work with my coach to develop that personality's role in life.
Oh. In other words, you were saying to mentor that role that I want to develop. And
yes.
And if in working with the 30-day retreat to that could be the thing that I work on.
That's right.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Wow. Okay. Thanks, Sherry. That's exciting. That's very exciting, actually.
Always fun to start a new relationship, isn't it?
Yeah, it totally is. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and especially, Virginia, one that we can be certain is going to end happily.
Going to end happily, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Oh, totally. Thank you so much. Keep in touch, huh? Yeah, I will. Thank you, Michael. Good night.
Good night.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Virginia. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. That was fun, Sherry.
Yeah.
Lots of things for all of us to explore.
They could come to the relationship workshop.
Right. All those new aspects.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And right now we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be back to talk to more callers.
Very good.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have more callers, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry. Hello, Michael. This is Jeff in North Carolina.
Oh, hello, Jeff. You know, you almost don't have to tell me what your name is. You just have to say hello, and I'm right there.
Right.
Great voice, you know.
Right. I figured that's what you meant.
Yeah.
Tonight, I wanted to talk with you about the process of being present and the process of not being present, if I could.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been looking at this a little bit with my coach, and I'm actually on a guidance appointment, the last guidance day, I think it was. So one of the things I've been looking at in particular is pleasurable fantasy and how that kind of tends to draw me off.
Mm-hmm.
And then another aspect I've been, a couple other aspects I've been looking at include how when I'm listening, when I'm recording and listening, but in particular listening, just sometimes how challenging it is for me to stay present to the listening. And then I've also been lately just doing things like putting reminders around, or actually even more than doing, I've been doing that for a long time, but I've also started to do things like the one I'm practicing this week with is whenever I change position from sitting to standing to lying or any from one of the three to one of the other three, to use that as a reminder to come back to the breath and kind of just trying to develop some kind of regular practices that will naturally help me to come back.
Mm-hmm.
With that one, that's been a little interesting. I'm finding it challenging to remember in the busyness of life. And then one day when I recorded a bunch of times around it, and that helped a little bit, but I still was finding it challenging. But one of the times when I was recording, the idea came in to actually practice sitting down and standing up, just to do that, you know, when no one else is around, just to practice sitting down, standing up while breathing. And then even sometimes when other people were around, just to do it just here and there in a way that it wouldn't be noticed that much. And that actually is the thing that has helped the most. Just to kind of reinforce that idea that what I'm practicing doing is, just having that be a reminder to come back to the breath. I'm practicing being present to, when sitting and standing. And still, I want to be honest with it, still finding it challenging, but that has helped a lot. And particularly with the fantasy, I've been, I know that I've spent some time identified with dissatisfaction around wanting to make progress, in quotes, with that. And
uh-huh.
And finding it very challenging, having a couple of days where, I really was able to stay present and stay out of the fantasy much more than usual, and really enjoying that in meditation and at other times, and then right back to this is this is a very common process for me, which is start a new practice and for a day or two it seems to, in quotes, work. And then, very, very quickly, it seems to slide back to the thing that, again, in quotes, was working. Just, it doesn't seem to get my attention anymore, and I'm back into the same old grooves. So,
uh-huh. Well,
so those
are things. Yeah, a couple of things about it, Jeff. I think you've already noticed, but I'm mostly saying this to encourage other people who are listening along. We can be practicing. So I'm practicing with how I sit up and stand up and breathe and walk and opening and closing doors mindfully or whatever it is. I take up these practices. And And it can seem like, and sometimes in the beginning it is true, that exactly what you described, I'm there for a little while and then it doesn't work any longer. It's not this. But the process is cumulative. So
the process is
cumulative. So even though you're not having the same experience of being mindful when you stand up, what you're doing is generally, overall, training yourself to be more present. So the thing that I think is really important is not allowing any assessment. Because that's the, you know, that's the mindfulness practice that we're trying to end, is turning to conditioned mind to find out how we're doing. Yeah. So I don't know if you've been in on any of these conversations. If you have, don't tell me, because there are other people listening who haven't been. One of the practices that I think is most effective is to decide on what, so let's go with the fantasy. I decide that I no longer want to indulge fantasies. And that's a big step right there, isn't it? To get to the point of, no, I really don't want to. Because with something like that, we're ambivalent for so long. And as long as we're ambivalent about something, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, knows that we actually belong to it. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yes, I think so, because if there's any kind of doubt or, you know, I'm going to be hooked.
That's right.
I'm always going to be hooked.
That's right. And it's going to keep throwing those hooks because it knows sooner or later I'm going to give in. Sooner or later, it's going to get me. Sooner or later, it's going to work. And so it'll just do that endlessly. So it's getting to the point of, no, I don't want to. Now, I still have a habit. We can't deny that. But I don't want that. So every time I get hooked, it's really against my will. Okay, so that's a huge step. And if I were going to take that on, I'm going to alter that kind of huge orientation, I would have recordings that address that, and I would address that in every new recording that I make. So in the email class, we're doing fitness and nutrition. And so I'm doing recordings around food, how I eat, what I'm seeing, you know, that. But with every one of those recordings, I'm going to have a little addendum about fantasy and how my commitment not to indulge that it's not what I want, it's not where I want my attention to be, where I want my attention to be, and then I would do the recording, the rest of the recording on where I want my attention to be, so that I never lose sight of this kind of overarching or the, you know, the big issue that I'm working on currently. And I would stay with that until it's no longer an issue in my life. Now, of course, as we know, that only means for now. It's not like it won't circle around and try to come back in. So I want to have, once it gets to the point where it feels like that's pretty much in the past, we're in maintenance on keeping that one out of conscious awareness, then it goes into the ones that are listened to randomly. So it's part of the ongoing reminders, but it's not in that focal point position in my awareness, in my practice.
Yeah, that's great. And I have heard that some of this kind of conversation that you've had with folks recently, but for some reason I haven't tried it to that extent with this. I'm happy to do that. I also have a kind of a follow-up to questions about, you talked about ambivalence or that sort of thing. And so this is something I've been practicing with, that pleasurable fantasy, I would say strenuously for some period of years, actively, you know, through meditation practice and so on to practice dropping it. And I, you know, I would say that I do not and have not, and I just, I'm not deliberately indulging it and haven't for some period of time. And yet it's, so I'm in the I guess I've finished that sentence. So there's, and I, yet I know that there's, that pull is so strong that any moment of losing, you know, attention,
mm-hmm.
and it's hooked, that pull of the pleasure and of it, it will grab me so quickly. And mm-hmm. so the, my question though is really about the ambivalence. When you say ambivalence, is it also, I can, you know, that part of me inside that wants that and thinks that what he wants so much, you know, and yet there's another part of me who's practicing. Would you call that ambivalence?
Jeff, I would say that the what wants that is not a part of you.
Mm-hmm.
It really is egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. Now, to check that out, and just to make sure, you could begin a conversation with the one who wants that, and that's in quotes, right? Because if it's an actual personality, then we could say him. But if it's egocentric karmic conditioning, then we have to do a little quote marks in the sky, because it's not real. The way to find that out, of course, is to begin a conversation to find out, what do you really want? What do you really want? What do you want in real life? Not in a fantasy, but in real life. What are you going for? And if that person can know what that is, and you can begin a process of meeting that directly, you know, I want to feel X. Okay, well, you can practice feeling X without going into pleasurable fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So if we run into a situation where there's a refusal to give up a behavior, even though there's an offer of something that is less harmful, in this case you, then we know we're not dealing with an aspect of personality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be interesting. I will definitely do that.
Because in either case, there's a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Either you set about assisting a part of you to meet a need directly in a way that allows him to participate fully in the life that he's actually living, or it's revealed to be a karmic scam to pull you into unconsciousness. Because, as you well know, when we are in that state of fantasy unconsciousness, karmic conditioning is just revving itself up and, you know, dining on your life force. So, There really isn't anything in it for us.
Yeah. So once it becomes clear who the players are, the one possible solution, if it's an aspect of the personality, would be to really mentor and embrace that part of the personality and help him find a way to have what he wants in the real world.
That's exactly right. So, again, in the email class, we know how many people in this country are addicted to sugar. And so the way we talk about it is, so this is very simplistic, but I think it's also on target. So people live in a very harsh, we could say cruel, kind of reality through most of their waking and probably their sleeping time on this earth. And then they have desserts, right? Then they eat sugar to have some sweetness. Well, that's not the sweetness that they're actually going for, but if that's all that's available, they're going to take it. And then, of course, the self-hating cycle of you are addicted to this, you can't not have it. What does that make you as a person who can't not ingest poison? And, you know, from there. So as soon as a person's life is filled with sweetness, with kindness, with love, with compassion, with care, gentleness, all of the things that we've been longing for all of our lives, suddenly giving up something like a poison is not such a hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sherry,
yes.
I thank you very much.
You are so welcome. You let me know, okay?
Okay, will do. Good night, Michael. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jeff. Good night.
Thank you, Sherry. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jeff. And Sherry, I think we have time for one more caller.
Oh, good.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jody, and I got through last week and we had a great conversation, so I can let somebody else go.
Oh, okay. That's very generous. Thank you, Jody.
Yeah, and
I
do want to be doing the thing in North Carolina, though. I do want to put that plug in.
Oh, good. Do that. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank
bye.
You.
Bye.
Bye. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Gabriel.
Well, hello, Gabriel. How's it
Hi,
going?
Hi, I'm so glad I hung in. Thanks, Jolene. That was very nice.
Very nice. Very
yeah.
nice. What's going on?
Okay. Well, I've become aware of an incredible amount of terror that ego has, and it's this terror of, oh, no, he's becoming too aware, too strong, and it's just, I feel it's going nuts inside of me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like,
yep.
he just knows too much. He knows what I'm up to. He knows what I'm doing.
Yep.
And that's
yep.
creating something very strange inside of me.
Yes. Yes.
Like this competition or something insane. I can't explain it.
You can't explain it, but I know exactly what you mean. So,
yeah.
You know, we see it. People are fascinated, it seems, by movies or films or books, whatever it is, about people who know that their death is just coming right on up, right?
Yeah.
And the scrambling, the terror, the horror, the pleading, the just doing any and everything to try to postpone the inevitable.
Right? Yeah.
And so you're getting to feel ego doing that inside of you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because that's exactly what's happening. As you become more aware, it loses its ability to control you. And so the last ditch thing it's got going for it is throw this massive amount of insane terror around inside your body, and you will attend to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, of course, that's all it wants is attention. That's actually all it needs is attention.
Yeah, and I notice when I'm recording and listening, I'm actually spending a great deal of energy ignoring whatever egocentric karmic conditioning wants to, you know, put in or say or do. And I feel that that separation of me ignoring ego, dying
yeah.
to say, to put in a word in the recording, just one.
Yeah, yes.
And the more I sort of like not go into it, then, you know, of course it just keeps upping its game, ego, and it just tries to be like, you're not being rational. That everything can't be this great. You know, you have to say something negative, because if
right.
you're not saying something negative, then you need to go see a doctor or something.
Right. There has to be something wrong somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny because the more I'm seeing that in my process of recording when I'm driving or when I wake up, then the more I see it with people, you know, in my around me and my surroundings sort of like telling me, like, what do you mean? Because I'm embodying more and more there's nothing wrong, and I kind of see people's response to that. Like,
yeah.
how can there not be something wrong? You know, you're dropping out of the tribe here, like.
Oh, well, now that is another conversation, Gabriel, right?
Yeah.
Because it's true. That's true, and that needs to be addressed truly as a separate issue. Now,
yeah.
the thing that I want to encourage you and anybody else who might be closing in on this experience, that it can only do that for a finite period of time.
Yeah.
If you can stick to the just ignoring it, bringing your attention back, keeping your attention where you want it to be, you know, it can escalate that up to a certain pitch, and then it's
mm-hmm.
really given everything that it's got. If it can't get your attention, then you're going to watch it begin to diminish.
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah, it doesn't
well,
mean it won't rest up and try to hit you again at some point, but it's really lost its firepower.
Yeah, sure, and bring it on.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's great.
No, but I'm glad I'm calling and recording this and I'm glad we're speaking about it, because I think this is a way that I can just continue to say no to
yes.
it.
Well, I'm glad we're speaking about it because over the years, I have met countless people who have reported to me that they had an awareness practice, they meditated for years, and then they hit a point where every time they sat down to meditate, they felt terror and they quit.
Yeah.
So I am really happy to have the opportunity to say that's what it is. It's not the time to quit. In fact, it's the time to do exactly what you're doing, which is record and listen more, practice ignoring it more assiduously, and just get it turned around as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And the importance of what you said, that you can see that the terror is not you.
No. No,
yeah.
And you know what, Sherry? I will not quit.
No, I know you won't.
I won't?
I know you won't. No, I know you won't.
No, I will not die
yeah.
not having lived.
That's exactly right, yes. And to get to the point of seeing what you're seeing and being as excited and thrilled with it as you are, you know, it would, no. we can't, there's a point at which we can no longer turn back, and that's the point ego is most terrified of us reaching.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
great.
Congratulations.
Well,
great job.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Have a good night, and it's been great. I'm always listening, just so you know. I love this show.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
It's always good to take that one more call, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and thanks again to Jody for graciously
giving
up that thought. So thanks to everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks to you, Michael, especially week after week after week after week.
After week
That's
after
appreciated.
Week.
Appreciated. After week.
You're very welcome. Right. It's a great privilege.
See you next week.
Okay. Talk to you next
okay.
week.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.